Anna bhavanti bhutani. Parjanya anna sambhavah. Yajnyat bhavati parjanyah. Yajnyah karma sumadbhuvah. Annat bhavanti bhutani parjanyat annasambhavah yajnyat bhavanti parjanyah yajnyah karma samudbhavah. Back to verse 10. Saha yajnaha prajaha shrishtva parovacha prajapatihi anena prasavishvadvam eshaha vaha astu ishtakama duk. And before that, yajñartat karmanaha anyatra lokaha ayam karma bandhanaha. So we're working on the word yajna here. So in the previous verse, verse 9, he says, a person is karma bandhanaha, one who's bound by karma, except for those karmas that are done for the sake of yajna, right, for the sake of yajna. And then karma done for that sake, for the sake of Ishwara, so yajna here is Ishwara. Karma done for the sake of Ishwara, ekaunteya, mukta sangaha, samacharaha, be one who does karma for the sake of Bhagawan, that karma yoga buddhi, being free from sangha, being free from attachment, where the sangha is free from the binding likes and dislikes. And then in the next verse he says, the Lord Prajapati, Brahmaji, having created first the beings together with the yajna, which is together with these rituals, he says, by those may you grow, may you mature, may you increase. Even increase in the sense one becomes two, you can become a family unit, and then you have children, and then life goes on. You develop, you mature. So by that may you mature, and let this yajna become an ishtakarmaduk, one who in the end will give everything, will give the all, will give everything. Will give everything in the sense of jnanam, atma-jnanam, where you realize that you in fact are everything and there's nothing that is not you. There's nothing more to be gained because I'm already everything. So the Vedas themselves will take you all of the way. So then, having said some other verses, he goes again now to why we as jivas, as individuals, as karma yogis, or just as dharmis who are held within the Vedic tradition, who are Vaidikas, those who are accepting the Vedas as a pramana, what do the Vedas have to say to you, to the ones who are Vaidikas, who are existing within the realm of the Vedas, who have Shraddha in the Vedas? What is your responsibility, and why is that your responsibility? So he wants to trace this all the way back to Ishwara. So he says, all beings, anat bhavanti bhutani, the beings, all living beings, all bhutas, in fact the whole creation, but here, all of the living beings, right? All things. The bhutas, just to give you a little bit, The Bhutas really can mean the elements or anything that Bhuta as a past passive participle, anything that has come into being. The whole creation has come into being. So the five elements are often called the Bhutas. The subtle elements are called the Mahabhutas. It means the subtle elements that become these physical elements, they are called the Bhutas. All living creatures that have taken birth, that have come into being, those are the Bhutas, Bhutani. So he says, you know, all beings, Bhavanti, they are born and not from food. Then Shankara says, you know, they're not born directly from food. The food for humans, the food or for animals or for living beings, the food has to be eaten. And so the food which is eaten becomes the material cause for these physical bodies. So annat bhavati bhutani, all the beings, all those that are born, all of the jivas that come into to take birth, they are born from food. The food that has been eaten becomes the material cause for these physical bodies. But then he says, okay, parajanyat annasambhavaha, and the food, right, the birth of the food is born, anna means food, annasambhavaha, the food is born from parajanya, from the rains, right? Without the rains, there would be no food. There'd just be sand, right? It would be just a giant desert. So without the rains, there would be no food. So the rains are born, the food is born from the rains. And then he says, yajñāt bhavati parajanyaha, and the rains are born from the yajña. Means the yajña here means that gratitude, that participation, my relationship with Dharma. My relationship with Dharma is really a relationship with all the devatas, with Ishwara. The devatas is all being part and parcel of Ishwara. It's that relationship with Dharma, that relationship of gratitude for the creation, looking at the creation as Ishwara, which means looking at every part of the creation as a conscious being, which you find yourself to be a part of and to be held by. And so your Dharma really is to be in a dharmic relationship with the rest of the creation, with Ishwara. The rest of the creation, that's really interesting language there. You have to be in a dharmic relationship with the rest of the creation. You being part of the creation, you know, being a part to the whole, need to recognize the rest of the creation as something which you are a part of and are in relationship to. But it's not just that. It's not just I am a conscious being in relationship with this physical creation that I'm experiencing. I, this conscious being, limited by my body, mind, sense organs, are in relationship to Ishwara, which is a conscious being. Right? Ishwara, the conscious being, the one from whom the whole creation comes, is sustained and resolves. This body, mind, sense organs is part of that creation, which comes from the self, that comes from Atma, from the Atma, which is Brahman. And so this body is not alone. It's not a soul body in an inert creation. It is part and parcel of Ishwara's body or Ishwara's total manifestation. And so if I'm just a being who is looking outward, we'll see in some later verses, if I'm just a being who is looking outward, my life basically is meaningless in a sense. It's not rooted in anything, really. I'm just the sensory, you know, I have this mind and sense organs which are just here to enjoy this world, and that's as far as I go, then I don't have any depth, or I don't have any relationship with the creation, really. It's me using in the creation for my enjoyment. And that leads to what we'll see in a later verse, that leads to just simply papa. There's no reciprocity, there's no gratitude, there's no being part of the whole. And so here he says he wants you to understand, and this verse wants us to understand, you know, where all of this is coming from, to see that actually the Vedas themselves and the Dharma itself is Ishwara, is Ishwara, that the Vedas themselves are Ishwara. So that's where we're going. So he says, the parjanyaha, the rains themselves come from yajna, and yajnaha karma samudbhavaha. So here, Shankara brings out this, if it says, okay, the the rains themselves are born from, the rains themselves are born from yajna, from this ritual, but the yajna is born from karma. Then Shankara says, but the karma is the yajna. You know, I'm doing a karma because they look at the karma as ritual. The karma is the yajna. Okay. And so saying that then, what is the difference between the karma and the yajna? So Shankara says, the yajna is the adrishtapala. The yajna, so this is the idea. If I'm doing any karma, say I'm doing a ritual, I'm actually performing the ritual, I'm throwing the ghee into the fire, all of these, just the physical actions. The drishtapala, the seen result, is every action that I'm doing, the lighting of the fire, the throwing of the havas into the fire, the havas goes into the fire, that's the result of throwing it into the fire. So these are all the seen results of doing the karma, the setting up, the completion of the ritual. That's drishta, the seen pala, drishtapala. But what is the unseen result of the drishtapala? The unseen result is the yajna. And so as I'm doing these rituals, or I'm doing my karma yoga, which is really offering, it's a continual yajna. Your karma yoga itself is a continual yajna, because all of the actions that I do are really for the sake of my antakarana shuddhi, and I receive all of the results with that prasada buddhi, which is that gratitude. So I'm continually in a relationship of gratitude with the creation. And so my whole life as a mumukshu, as a karma yogi, is one of yajna, right? Because the karmas themselves are just producing that blessing. So here he says, the karma itself, look at the karma as the drishtapala, the action that's being done, and that the result of that action that is being, what is born from the action that is being done, is yajna. The yajna is the blessing itself of the ritual, which is adrishta, the adrishtapala. And the adrishtapala is what allows the food to grow, the rains to come. The adrishtapala is that blessing what allows the creation to keep going in balance, that in Shankara and Swamiji say, the rains to come at the appropriate time, when they're needed, in the appropriate amount, you know, and for the waters to be there to water the plants and to water the vegetation at the right time, the temperature to be there at the right time, let it be cold when everything needs to be dormant, and let it become warm, you know, as the trees and the crops need to come up. Let it not decide to freeze, you know, after the crops have already are already coming up. So then they're frozen, the fruits are ready to come, and then there's a freeze and all of the, you know, everything is frozen, so they're all not allowed to fructify. And so that is, even though rains come and the seasons change, they're all changing out of order when the participation, but our participation is not correct. In other words, when there's basically a non-participation. And so recognizing, because human beings have free will, the Shastra, the Karmakanda especially goes to great lengths to from childhood to raise you in that Dharma, so that your orientation with the creation is just not that of a bogey, you know, of somebody who wants to enjoy these sense objects, but of a dharmi, of somebody who is living a life in harmony with Bhagavan, with Ishwara, recognizing the whole creation as a sentient being, having that love and respect toward all beings and toward the creation itself, being grateful for everything that it gives you. So here that's where he says, yajnaha karma samudbhavaha. And then it goes on to the next verse, so let's chant some more.
Karma brahmodbhavam diddhi brahma akshara samudbhavam tasmat sarvagatam brahma Nityam yajne pratishtitam.
Karma brahma udbhavam viddi. Brahma akshara samudbhavam. Tasmat sarvagatam brahma. Nityam yajne pratishtitam. Karma, the karma itself, so karma, which is born of yajna, here it says that yajna, the first one takes the yajna as the adrishtapala that you get from doing the karma. Now it says also, karma is brahma udbhavam, viddi. May you know that the karma, the rituals that are being done, are born of Brahman, of Brahma. Now, Brahma often means the Vedas. Okay, here Brahma means the Vedas, so we'll see why as we go on. So, may viddi, please know that the karma is something that is born of the Vedas. And then, brahma aksharam, akshara samudbhavam. And that the Vedas, the Brahma which is born, the karma which is born of the Vedas, that Brahma, the Vedas, is born from the Brahmakshara, the imperishable Brahman. Imperishable Brahman here means Ishwara. It has to mean Ishwara because Brahman, nothing is born from Brahman, right? Brahman is the Adhishtana, which always remains exactly the same. But as Ishwara, the Ishwara that comes into manifestation, that Ishwara coming into manifestation brings into manifestation the Vedas. Okay, so we'll talk about this in a minute. So the Vedas themselves come from Ishwara, Brahmakshara. Akshara means imperishable, the Ishwara that is always there. Ishwara is always there in the sense that from beginningless time, that Maya, look like this, the Maya is that Sattva Rajas Tamas. Incidental attribute. This is Swamiji's word. I love this word, you know, but I always forget it. What does he say? What is that? Then I remember that, yeah, that's a really nice word. Incidental attribute means the Maya itself. You know, it doesn't belong to anyone else. There's no place else to put Maya. So Maya belongs to Brahman, but Brahman is non-dual. So there's no place for Maya in Brahman because Brahman is absolutely non-dual. There's no time, there's no space, there's no quality, there's just conscious being, me, conscious being. And yet there is this Maya. So in the non-dual Brahman, for which there is nothing else, there's no time, there is no space, there's nothing to objectify, we have to put the Maya in Brahman. But how can Maya, which is Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas, and responsible for the cyclical creation of the creation, how can that be in Brahman? Well, it is in Brahman as an incidental attribute. Incidental attribute means it doesn't bring about any change to Brahman because it is mitya. It has no independent existence for there to be Brahman and an existent Maya, you know. And so when that is understood, this Maya that has its very being is in Brahman is just a natural expression of Brahman. And when we acknowledge Maya as being an incidental attribute of Brahman, not bringing about any change to Brahman at all, then we say Ishwara. But the instant we acknowledge the Maya Upadhi, Ishwara. When I'm looking at what is the truth of Ishwara, what is the Adhishtana of this, the Adhishtana, the actual being of what is here in this, you know, manifestation of infinite knowledge, that comes and goes, you know, and that itself, if you were to analyze it and just go into trying to find out something here, you find everything comes into being and goes out of being because it's bound by change. Everything in Ishwara. Ishwara itself is coming into manifestation and going into causal, into manifestation, going into causal. When it's manifest, it is in continual process of change. That means everything in the creation comes into being and goes out of being. Which is impossible. It is impossible something to come into being from what? Right? Just from nothing. No, that's not possible. So what is actually the material cause? The material cause, the thing from which it comes, cannot be non-existent. And so when we are analyzing the creation just from our using our sensory perception and doing our using our analytical skills, we find that there's nothing to find. We can't find anything here that has independent being, because something that is bordered by non-existence, just by that fact, comes into being and goes out of being. It can't have independent existence, because nothing can come into being and out of being from nothing, because nothing's not there for it to come from. So that itself is a big problem in terms of establishing any being or reality for this creation that's independent of me. The other problem is that anything here that you name, that you have a name for, the whole creation, we have names for it and more names and more and more names. But when we analyze any given name, any given object that has carrying this name, we find that there's no object there. All there are names within names within names within names within names. Means every object is broken down infinitely into smaller and smaller objects. So every object, everything you have a name for, is actually a conglomerate of other things that are names. Swami Jesus goes, everything that we experience is really just names within names within names within names of what? Of what actually is. What is actually the material cause, what we call the upadana karana? What is actually the material cause of any given namarupa? Right? It has to be something there. Right? There has to be something that is filling that form. Like if we say, for a pot form, just using it as an example, for a pot form, the form has to have a substance, and that substance is clay. So clay is what is necessary, is the adhishtana for that pot form. But the problem is, that's just an illustration, because we can now go into the clay itself and find out that the clay itself is made of particles, and it can break down into molecules, and it breaks down into quarks, and endlessly breaks down into smaller and smaller and smaller pieces. Names within names within names within names of what? The problem is, if you say, well, the quark itself is made of other mini quarks. Well, I don't know if the names, for they have so many names. Okay. So quark itself is made of this nama. But then that has a form. By form, I mean it, that, whatever it is, that can be differentiated from something else or becomes a part to the whole. So in the end, what actually is cannot be a form. It can't be a form. If it's a form, you have to get to what the substance of the form is. And so this goes into an infinite regress of names within names within names within names of what actually is here. And what actually is here can't be a form, because then you have to go, what is the being, what is the substance of that form? So that means that what actually is here has to be free of form. You have a choice. You can say, well, what is actually here is non-existence, because we take this, it's like peeling the onion. Peel the onion, peel the onion, peel the onion, peel the onion, and well, guess what? After you've peeled the whole onion, there's nothing there. But the problem, that's not going to work here. Because you can't have as the substance of any given nama-rupa, small or large, the substance itself can't be non-existent. Because if it's non-existent, there won't be anything there. Now, see, think of the clay, the pot form. Okay, the substance of the pot form is non-existence. Well, because the pot form might as well stand for a quark. The pot can stand for anything. The content of the pot form is non-existence. Then, where's the pot form? There is no pot. There cannot be a pot form, because there's nothing there as the substance of that namarupa, of that rupa. So take the substance out, and there's nothing there. And so at the bottom of everything, it's not going to be non-existence, but it is going to be existence which is free of form. And existence which is free of form is not something that you can experience with your sense organs. Oh, look at that existence which is free of form. Now, what pramana do you have to be able to look at that? You can't look at it. You can only be it. You can only be it, and that is what you are. You are the very being, just free of time, free of space, the Satchitananda Atma, which always is, and that isness is experienced linguistically as my own amness, me. And we experience me, the conscious being that I am, as the non-divisible common denominator of every experience, subtle or gross, that we have. Subtle means mental, emotional experiences, imaginal experiences, dream experiences. I am the Satchit, common, the being itself is the common denominator of that, and being itself is the common denominator of this. It is, it is, it is, it is, it is. There's no exception. Anything in my mind, it is, it is, it is, and is. I am the common denominator. And it not only is, it is known. That means the common denominator of all experience of the entire creation is conscious being. And there is no conscious being to be objectified. The only thing in the totality of experience that cannot be objectified is the Atma, is the self. Because I am not an object of time and space, and even in my own self-analysis, when we do the Driksha Viveka, the seer seeing, I am the one who is always left. After I negate, objectify everything that can possibly be objectified, I am left as the one who simply is conscious being that cannot be objectified at all. So that conscious being means what? It means me. What you mean when you say me, this myself, my own being, in contemplation, when the one we're left with, you know, the one we recognize that I can never negate, that's the one we're talking about. That non-objectifiable me that is my own self-experience doesn't require any type of subject-object relationship because consciousness itself. So that Brahman, which has no, from its own standpoint, has no ability for objectification, it is free of nama-rupa, is the very being from which all nama-rupa comes. All name and form comes, but all of that name and form that comes is not coming from Brahman, in that Brahman yourself is not objectifiable for it to, or doesn't have any parts to say, oh, let's just switch around and do a switcheroo and, you know, become a whole manifestation of nama rupa in the form of this creation. Brahman doesn't do anything. But the maya, the sattva rajas tamas, is the innate to Brahman. This incidental attribute, it has no being of its own, but it is an expression of the infinite knowledge. It's an expression of Brahman. So you can say this whole creation is Brahman. This is my being. This is my expression. But this expression brings about no change at all to me. It's just my expression. Like your dream is your expression. It brings about no change to you at all. You remain exactly as you are, but here's this expression. You can say the dream, even though limited, the dream still is an expression of my maya, of maya, from a limited standpoint. And that expression of maya is my expression, comes into manifestation, it goes out of manifestation, I remain exactly the same. The creation comes into manifestation, it maintains and then goes out of manifestation, I remain always exactly the same. So this creation itself, being maya, can't bring about any change to me, but at the same time, it is me and I pervade the whole thing. Just like as a jiva, you can recognize that any thought you have, any imagination, say I ask you to have an imagination of the creation, your own creation. Okay. So as soon as I say that, bam. So you have an imagination. Whatever the imagination may be, it comes from you. It is sustained by you. There's no part of that imagination that's away from you. And it goes back into you. All the while, nothing happening to you. Your imagination can be large. It can be a little bitty imagination, you know. It can be an infinite imagination. But for you, just think about this. Just for you as a jiva, you have an imagination. Say I ask you to imagine the creation with the earth rotating around the star, around the sun, and all the planets rotating and then going out far, vast, vast, vast. You have this imagination. It's your imagination. Or I ask you to have imagination, you know, of a little tiny ant that you're holding in your hand like this. You know, little tiny imagination, taking up very little space. You know, that imagination just takes up this little tiny space of your hand. Okay. So it's a little tiny imagination. This is a great big huge imagination. But for you, it's not big or huge. The infinite imagination is not infinite for you. A little imagination is not little for you. So the imagination of the whole infinite creation from the standpoint of me, you know, in reference to this vast, infinite, we keep discovering how infinite it is, how large it is, in reference to me, how long that it's been here in reference to me, this body, mind, sense organs. It's not even a flicker. It's not even a flicker. This whole experience we're having right now, your whole life, is not even a flicker compared to, you know, the time the whole creation has been here, beginningless time, and how large the whole thing it is. It's kind of like that. But from my perspective, it's much more than a flicker. It's much more than a flicker. So here, everything that exists in you, for the standpoint of the self, though, there is no time and space for you, for the Atma. And because the whole creation, whether you deem it large or small, exists in you, there's also no concept of it being big or small. But you say, oh, that's infinite. That's somebody within the imagination saying, this is infinite. This is too big. I'm only a flicker. I don't count. I'm only a flicker in this thing. But from the standpoint of the imagination isn't big and small or small. You are the self of the entire thing, and that's just what it is, you know. That's kind of a beautiful thing to understand, because people wonder, well, how can Bhagavan hear me? You know, it goes into infinite, you know, in every direction. I'm just a flicker. How can I even matter, you know? But from the standpoint of your being, it's not about mattering or not mattering or being a flicker or being big. That's not the experience. I am the whole, and I am everything that exists in that whole. That's just a whole different dimension. So here, so in this verse, what he says, Swamiji spends a lot of time here just kind of talking about Ishwara and what all of this means and what the experience actually is. So he says, so here, may you know that this karma, it is born from the Vedas. The Vedas are viewed as being beginningless along with the creation, as existing and part and parcel of the very order of the creation. The Vedas are not viewed as created, therefore they're viewed as an existent fact that is part and parcel of the creation, and that you come to know of it. Your knowledge of the Vedas, and like any knowledge, is simply the laws of the Vedas, or what the Vedas are telling you. The Vedas are viewed as knowledge, means that they are an expression of how things are. Yeah. And you gain that knowledge by removing the ignorance. You're not creating the knowledge, you're removing the ignorance of how things are, which is true with any knowledge. If it's knowledge, if you're gaining knowledge, you have to, first of all, be gaining that knowledge through a means of knowledge. And what that means of knowledge does is give you the knowledge of the thing, whatever it may be, as it is. So knowledge is not dependent upon you, right? It's dependent on the object itself. So Ishwara is a manifestation of infinite knowledge, but I am covered as a limited jiva. I only have so much knowledge, and I have to operate a means of knowledge in order to pull back the as though veil of ignorance to see things, see things as they are. So the Vedas themselves are viewed as part of the total, part of the knowledge of Ishwara, the nature of Ishwara. And so here, may you know that the karma, the rituals that you do, they are born of the Vedas, and the Vedas themselves are born of Ishwara. It means they exist as part of the Ishwara Swarupa. And then he says, Tasmat therefore sarvagatam brahma nityam yajne pratishtitam. Therefore, you know, may you always, let me just fix it. Therefore, the sarvagatam brahma, the Brahman which is all pervasive, which is nitya, which is itself the Vedas, which is itself Ishvara, may you know that that always exists, all nitya, and that always exists in the yajna. So actually what this means is that any yajna that you do, that yajna comes from the Vedas, the Vedas come from Ishvara, Ishvara comes from Brahman, and so Brahman, Brahman, Ishvara, the Vedas, all exist in this yajna. So the yajna is something, that relationship of the part to the whole of myself to Ishvara is something that's held in the Vedas, which is an expression of Ishvara, and it is what makes the world go round. So this chakra, this cycle of the rains coming and the rains coming on time, and the food growing, and my being able to eat and to have children and have families and have the whole creation circling around like that, depends upon you as a dharmi, as a jiva, participating in that. So then Swamiji brings up this. Well, it's actually in the next verse, but I'll use it as a lead for the next verse. He brings up, you know, why do I need to participate? It doesn't really matter, you know. Do I need to participate? What if everybody else participates? I don't really need to participate. So he tells the story. The story is, there's this king who has a really very, very high regard for his kingdom and all of the people in it. He says, all the people in my kingdom are dharmis. They're really good, good people. And his minister says, a king, I don't think so. Many of the people are dharmis, but there's always going to be a few, you know, thieves and criminals here and there. And the king says, no, not in my kingdom. Everybody is good. There's nobody who's a thief. There's nobody who's a criminal. No adharmis here. And so, the minister said, I don't think so. I don't think that you can just assume that. So the king said, okay, let me put them all to the test for you. Let me put them to the test. Build a great big, like a great big vat, huge vat. That means a big, it's like a big, if you have a water container, like in a well, you have a great big thing that holds all of the water. It's like a huge water tank. So build a huge tank that's very high, okay? And then put a ladder up to the top of it, in this empty tank. And then just instruct everyone in the village, in my kingdom, to come and put in a small amount of milk. And he does exactly what the size of milk. Everyone is to climb up there and put in milk. Okay, so maybe they have to all put in a cup of milk. Okay, so everybody. So that's the instruction. So one by one, these thousands of people come up, and they climb up the ladder one by one, and they put in their milk, and they go down, and they put in their milk, and they go down, and then. Finally, that is done, and so the tank is full by this time, most likely full. And so there, all of the people go away, and then the king says, "Now let us go up and look into that tank, and see if the milk looks watery. If the milk looks really watery, then people have dumped some water into it." Okay. So they say, "Okay." So they ascend up to the top, and they look over into the tank. And what do they see? Is nice, clean, fresh water. Water? So they thought, well, the understanding was, well, nobody would know So this is for every Buddhi one. Nobody will know. There's so many people. So many people are giving the milk that if I put in a little water, nobody will know the difference. It doesn't make any difference, you know. And since we're all the same, really no need to do this silly thing. Let me just put some water in there. I can't really afford the milk, but nobody will know the difference one way or the other. So for Swamiji, that's Swamiji's story. I'm sure he made it up himself. And so then the moral is this. You know, you can never think other people will do it. You can never say, let the other people do it, or let the other people go first. You have to be the one who always goes first. You're the one that has to do it. It can't be about what other people do, whether they do it or not do it. You have to go first. The Sama says, you always have to go first. And then he says, we have time, in this next verse, you know, what happens when you're not really participating in this yajna? You know, what about when I'm not doing my part, when I'm not giving back to the gods, just with my gratitude, just with acknowledgement that you are there, that you exist, because of you, I am here. Because of you, I am cared for. I am loved. I can live. You know. So without that relationship with Bhagavan and with all of the devatas, then what? Then what is like? So let's do this next verse here.
Evam pravartitam chakram. Nanuvartayati hayaha Agha yurindriya ramaha Mokham partha sajivati
Evam pravartitam chakram Na anuvartayati iha yaha Aghayuhu Indriya Ramaha Mogham Partha Sajivati. So it says, in this manner, Evam Pravartitam, this chakra, this wheel, you know, of cause and effect wheel that we find ourselves participating in, he says, if this chakra, this yajna chakra, you know, which is itself continuing on, Pravartitam, it's in motion. So this ritual, this yajna, this relationship between myself, between the jiva and all of the devatas and Ishwara, this is in motion. And because of this chakra, you know, the rains come and the food grows and the individuals exist and multiply. So life is good. So and with this chakra that is already in motion in this manner, he says, yaha iha. The one who here na anuvartiyati does not follow it, does not participate in it. So that person, agayuhu, that person is an agayuhu. He lives a life of aga is, actually aga is kind of a strong word. Agayuhu means lives a violent life or a life of papa, but lives a life of sin, but we don't use that word really. So he lives a life of papa. So agayuhu, indriya ramaha, that person is an agayuhu, is an indriya ramaha, one who is just rejoicing. Rama means to revel. In fact, Rama comes from this root rum. So Lord Rama is the one who's reveling in dharma, reveling in the atman, reveling, that's for Bhagavan is Rama. But Rama means just to revel. So the one who is reveling in his indriyas, indriya ramaha, in my sense organs. I'm reveling in feeding my sense organs. That's what I do. I am here to enjoy, to get as much as I can out of the world, and to feed my sense organs. So I'm reveling in my sense organs, he says. Such a person, mogham parata sajivati, sahajivati, e parata, that person lives, sahajivati, that person lives, mogha, in vain, uselessly. It's a useless, fruitless life. Because the person is so completely ungrounded. All that is here is me and this. That's all. I'm not part of anything. I don't recognize Ishwara. I don't recognize my own being. I don't recognize the creation. I don't recognize the Atma as being the one from whom the creation has come, even hypothetically as taught in the Vedas, let alone having realized it. But I don't see myself as something rooted in Ishwara and being a part of this creation with my own part to play. That I actually, every being has a part to play. And I'm not playing my part, you know. Everybody else may be playing their part. You may think everybody else is playing their part, but I'm not playing my part. And so Swamiji says, don't ever think about everybody else. You play your part. Everybody's playing their part. I can skate. I can just do what I want to do because they're taking care of everything. But what if everybody's saying that? So never use that as an excuse. You play your part. You think of Bhagawan. You do have that Karma Yoga Buddhi. You receive, you always are in relationship with this world and the Ishwara with that prasada buddhi, accepting everything with that gratitude and with that grace. Otherwise, the whole life becomes something which is useless. And so then after that, he says, what about the person, you know, who does it right? the person who does that's very beautiful. Actually, with this next verse, I'll just tell you a few things about it because it's a beautiful verse. I didn't want to do it next class, not this one. As long as that kartritvam is there, that doership is there, I need to be in relationship with Ishwara because I take myself to be this jiva, this body, mind, sense organs, this person. And then what is my relationship to the creation, to Bhagavan? So then, with that, these rituals in this relationship, that Karma Yoga Buddhi is all so necessary for me to be really participating in this world in a way that blesses me and all beings. It's not just me, it blesses all beings. You know, because I'm giving back to Ishwara what needs to be given back to Ishwara for that chakra to go around, so it blesses all beings. But what if I have knowledge? What about the jnani? What about the stitta prajnaha? Is the stitta prajnaha the one who's rooted in self-knowledge, who knows, in fact, I am Ishwara? What does that person do? Does that person need to perform all of these karmas? Because for that person, there's not even any kartritvam. For the jnani, for the mahatma, for the jnani, the stitta prajnaha that Shankara has talked about before, there's no doing at all. So what happens to that person in reference to what you're saying right now? So now he'll talk a little bit about that. It's very beautiful. So, Om Tat Sat. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.